Translation: Maitreya continued, O best of the Kuru dynasty, I shall now describe before you the descendants of Shyambhuva Manu, who was born of a part of a plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please repeat. Maitreya continued, O best of the Kuru dynasty, I shall now describe before you the descendants of Shyambhuva Manu, who was born of a part of a plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma is a powerful expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although Brahma is Jiva Tattva, he is empowered by the Lord, and therefore he is considered a plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes it happens that when there is no suitable living being to be empowered to act as Brahma, the Supreme Lord himself appears as Brahma. Brahma is the plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Shyambhuva Manu was the direct son of Brahma. The great sage Maitreya is now going to explain about the descendants of this Manu, all of whom are widely celebrated for their pious activities. Before speaking of these pious descendants, Maitreya has already described the descendants of impious activities, representing anger, envy, unpalatable speech, quarrel, fear and death. Purposely, therefore, he is next relating the history of the life of Dhruva Maharaj, the most pious king within this universe. Dhruva Maharaj leaves home. So this is the story of Dhruva Maharaj. And here, this actually took place long, long ago, during the time of Shatrujug, right after the creation. Brahma created this universe, and after, not created, Lord created the universe, but Brahma engineered to do the interior decoration of the universe, to arrange all the things that were needed for the functioning of the universe. And Brahma engineered that activity, and then Brahma created a Manu, Shyambhuva Manu. Brahma is known as Shyambhu because Brahma is born from the navel of the Lord. Brahma directly appeared from the Lord. And that's why Brahma is known as Shyambhu. Like Shyambhur Narada Sambhu. So Brahma is known as Shyambhu, and the son of Brahma who became the Manu, the first Manu, is called Shyambhuva Manu. And so this Shyambhuva Manu was the grandfather of Dhruva Maharaj. So it is a custom in the Vedic society to establish the lineage of the person they are going to talk about. Generally, when someone was going to talk, so here Dhruva Maharaj's life and activities are going to be described by the sage Maitreya. So before talking about Dhruva Maharaj, Maitreya Rishi is telling who Dhruva Maharaj is. And that's why he is describing who is Dhruva Maharaj's great-grandfather, who is Dhruva Maharaj's grandfather, who is Dhruva Maharaj's father, and then he is coming to describe about Dhruva Maharaj. So this shows that how authentic these Vedic descriptions are. Nowadays people think that the descriptions in the Vedas and Upanishads and Purans, they are simply some imaginary fairy tales. But this is a proof, anybody can see that this is the proof proof about the authenticity of the Vedic descriptions. Vedas are not describing about some fictitious characters. Vedas are actually describing about the real personalities, and thus describing about these activities of these real personalities. Vedas are helping us to approach the absolute truth. We cannot approach the absolute truth by following a bunch of lies. Can anybody become a wise man by following or mastering some fairy tales? Did anybody ever see that somebody became wise, or not only wise, somebody got the absolute wisdom by just by reading and researching on Grimm's Märchen or Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tales? No. That's the difference between the fairy tales and the absolute history. The Vedas are actually describing about the historical personalities, and we can, anybody who reads Vedas with proper guidance and understanding, then he can immediately see that the Vedas are describing about truth and nothing but the truth. We can see that there's such a long history before they're talking about here Dhruva Maharaj, who is practically one of the first personalities on this planet, but still they're describing who Dhruva Maharaj is. Dhruva Maharaj's great-grandfather is Brahma. Or rather, great-great-grandfather is Brahma. And his great-grandfather is, actually great-grandfather is Brahma, his grandfather is Svayambhuva Manu, and his father is King Uttanapad. Now, consider any of these the characters in the fairy tales. Like, do you know about the names of their fathers? Consider some character. You may know the name of the father, but did they ever describe the name of their grandfather? Does anybody know who is the father of Snow White? Or the seven dwarfs? Or Hansel or Gretel? No. Because they just pick up some character from their mind and they just build up a story basing on that character. But in history you can't do that. But when you read history, then you get the name of the father. Like if somebody asks you, who is Napoleon's grandfather? And if you're an expert historian, then you'd know. Yes, Napoleon's grandfather is such and such person. Who is the father of Hitler? Who is the father of Mussolini? Everybody knows. Or at least anybody who studied history knows. Because these personalities are real characters. They are not just some fictitious characters. And this way one gets to understand how great these personalities were and how aristocratic was their lineage. And what to talk about Dhruva Maharaj, even we can go back to our ancestral line. Like, of course, not in our physical body or the line that gave birth to our physical body, but our spiritual lineage, we can immediately relate. Our father is Prabhupada, our grandfather is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, our great-grandfather is Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, then his father is Bhakti Vinod Thakur, then Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. It goes on, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So we can go all the way up to Krishna. So we are coming from the spiritual sky, and our line comes from Krishna. And it is very important to understand that. That's why when one takes to spiritual life, one must link up with certain spiritual family. And there are, generally there are four different families, family lines. The Brahma, Rudra, Shri and Kumar. These are the four Vaishnava sampradayas. And anybody who wants to go back to Godhead must become linked up with one of these four. And then our line is very, very special because it not only comes out of one of these four lines, but our line has a tremendous personality who came from one of these four sampradayas, that is Brahma Sampradaya, and that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is like sometimes we see that there are some big aristocratic families, and they are very, very big. The family line is very famous and very big. And in that family, one person becomes extremely successful, right? And his line becomes very, very special. The same way, our line actually is the line of Brahma, and it comes down to Madhvacharya's line. And then in that line, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. The most wonderful personality. Like all the four sampradayas are there, but in that one of these sampradayas, all of a sudden there was the appearance of a personality brilliant as the sun. Actually, not only brilliant as the sun, he's even more brilliant than billions of suns together. That is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Himself appeared in this line. And that's why in Chaitanya Charitamrita it has been described Ishwar Purike Dhanna Korilen Sri Chaitanya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu glorified Ishwar Puri. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to glorify Ishwar Puri. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to glorify the sampradaya of Madhvacharya. It is just out of his causeless mercy or out of his transcendental will, Mahaprabhu did that. But generally, we do not have any such direct link with Madhvacharya. Mahaprabhu himself defeated Madhvacharya's followers, Madhvacharya's philosophy. The Madhvas, the Tattvad, Madhvacharya's followers, they generally, their philosophy is that ultimately one becomes liberated. Not with Shajujya Mukti, but four other kinds of liberation. Sharupya, Samipya, Shalukya and Shashti. And the goal is to go back to Vaikuntha. That is their ultimate accomplishment. So when Mahaprabhu met them in his tour to South India, he went to Udipi, the place of Madhvacharya, and there he had a discussion with this Acharya of that Sampradaya. And Mahaprabhu asked, what is the ultimate goal of life? And they said, liberation is the ultimate goal of life. Then Mahaprabhu did not accept it. He said, no, that's wrong. In a very humble way. Actually, Mahaprabhu used to defeat everybody in a very humble way. He would not just smash them directly. Mahaprabhu would take up a very humble position and he would question them. And Mahaprabhu began to ask him questions. Well, you are saying mukti is the ultimate goal, but then why it has been said that Mukti Devi herself, the mukti liberation personified, with folded hands, begs a devotee to engage her in some service, to give him some service to render for them. The devotees do not desire mukti or liberation. And Mukti Devi, liberation personified, follows the devotees. So devotees do not want liberation, but liberation follows the devotees with the folded hands. Please, let me do something for you. And then he quoted another shlok that says that Krishna is telling in Srimad Bhagavatam that even though I offer liberation to my devotees, but my devotees do not accept them. Diyamanam nagrinhanti bina mat shevanam jana. My devotees do not want anything. My devotees do not want liberation. That is not favorable for devotional service. So this way Mahaprabhu quoted shlokas from the scriptures. And those people were actually learned people. So then they immediately understood that what Mahaprabhu was telling was right. And what they were practicing was wrong. Liberation can never be the goal of a devotee's devotional service. Devotional service takes place in a platform beyond liberation. Actually, we have this. And beyond material nature is the region of liberation. And beyond that region of liberation is devotional service. Actually, liberation, the state of liberation is actually like a state of neutrality. When one is neutral, one is neither bound nor engaged in service, then it is the region of liberation. Graphically, we can see this way, that we have the axis zero, and on the left-hand side, the left-hand side of the axis is minus, and right-hand side of the axis is plus, right? Everybody must have done graph. So, now, zero is the liberation, the state of liberation, right? And the left-hand side of liberation is material nature, right? All minus, the region of negative region. It is all minus. The more you go, the more you become minus, right? The deeper you go, the more negative you become, more bound you become. And then, like for instance, you have a date of, say, 100,000 Deutschmarks you owe in the market. Now it is negative, right? You are minus 1,000 or 100,000 Deutschmarks. Now when you are minus, then your whole concern is how you are going to square up the debt, right? So then you square up the debt. And when you square up the debt, then you become zero, right? You don't have any more debt. But this zero is not the ultimate goal. Once you have reached the region of zero, then you must go across that region, go beyond that region, and come to the positive direction. Then you, after you have attained the position of zero, then you begin to put money in the bank. Then you are 1,000 mark, 2,000 mark plus, 4,000 marks, 100,000 marks, and it goes on. So same way, when you are materially conditioned, when you are bound by the material nature, then we are in a negative region. We are minus. And deeper we go in the material nature, more minus we become. The more one has in the material nature, it's actually negative. It is not that if in the material nature, if one has 10 million dollars or 10 million Deutschmarks, it doesn't mean that he is actually plus 10 million Deutschmarks. Actually, he is minus 10 million Deutschmarks. Because he has to become free from this asset that he has, and then he has to come to the point of liberation. That is, he has to become from that region, from that 1 million Deutschmark or 10 million Deutschmarks, he has to become zero, right? And then that means one has to become free from all material attachment, all material assets, from all material bondage. And then, reaching the point of zero, then he begins his devotional service. When one becomes totally free from all material bondage, then he begins to render pure devotional service. And then as he renders his service, he increases his bank account in the spiritual sparkase in Golok Vrindavan. So, in the material nature, we are in a negative platform. So, when we are negative, then we try to become neutral. We want to square it up. That no more debts. We square up the debts and come to the point of zero. And after we have reached that point of zero, then we become qualified to have more and more bank accounts in the spiritual bank. That's why it is said that devotion, pure devotional service actually begins from Brahma Bhuta platform. Yeah, now let me describe it this way, that this material nature is there, and beyond this material nature is Brahma Jyoti, or the region of Brahma, and beyond the region of Brahma is Vaikuntha, a spiritual sky. So that is the geography of the entire creation. We can see material nature, Brahma Jyoti, and then Vaikuntha Loka. Now, from the material nature, when you want to Vaikuntha Loka, then we have to go through this Brahma Bhuta platform. That means the platform when there is no more, when we have no more material bondage. That's why it is said in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma na sochati na kangshati sama sarveshu bhutesu madbhaktiṃ labhate param. When one attains the Brahma Bhuta platform, when one becomes totally free from material attachments. And how does one become totally free from material attachments? When one realizes that he is actually a spirit soul. When one realizes that he is a spirit soul and he is not this body, then he is situated in the Brahma Bhuta platform. It is not that we physically go into some real place called Brahma Bhuta Loka, or Brahma Loka, Brahma Jyoti. No, it is actually a state of consciousness. And when we reach that region of Brahma Bhuta platform, that is when we become totally free from all material attachments by realizing that we are not this material body, then na sochati na kangshati, then one does not have any hankering for anything, or nor does he have any lamentation for anything that he lost. Jai Shri Radha Madhava, Jai Shri Gaurangata. The hankering and lamentations are actually for, we hanker for the things that we do not have, and we lament for the things that we have lost. Now, in material nature, we are constantly in this dilemma of hankering and lamenting. We are always craving for something that we do not have, and we are always lamenting for something that we have lost. And that is the material condition. But when one transcends this material condition, then the first symptom is that he does not hanker for anything, and he does not lament for anything. Na sochati, na kangshati, sama sarveshu bhuteshu, madbhaktiṃ labhate param. Then he sees everyone with an equal vision. He does not see different living entities according to their different physical forms. He doesn't consider one to be his body. Neither he considers himself to be his body, nor does he consider others to be their bodies. He simply sees the spirit soul. And that's why in his eyes, everyone is equal. He's a real communist. Actually, a transcendentalist is a real communist, because he sees everyone equal. Not artificially, but naturally. Because he sees that everyone is a spirit soul. And everyone is actually hankering for something spiritual. And that's why he tries to give them everything that one really needs. That is, his spiritual needs are fulfilled by the mercy of a Vaishnava. We offer our prayers, Vancha Kalpa Tarubhascha, Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha, Patitanam Pavanebhu Vaishnavibhu Namonam. Vancha Kalpa Tarubhascha. A Vaishnava has been compared to a desire tree. Now, one may think, actually I used to think in the beginning, then why does the Vaishnava don't give? Why does the Vaishnavas give what we actually want? We don't see Vaishnavas are giving all kinds of things to different people. Like somebody may come and say that, why don't you give me a Mercedes Benz? But a Vaishnava doesn't give that. Like I didn't see Prabhupada giving anyone a Mercedes Benz or a things like that. Prabhupada, but then later on I realized the Vaishnava doesn't really give anything material. Vaishnava knows what we actually want, and Vaishnava is capable of giving that. And he always gives that, provided we are willing to take that. If you go to a Vaishnava and tell him that give me 100,000 Deutschmarks, then Vaishnava won't give you that. On the other hand, if you have 100,000 Deutschmarks, Vaishnava will try to take it away from you. So be be careful of the Vaishnavas. They are dangerous people. So Vaishnava actually takes away our material things and gives us the spiritual assets. That is the position of a Vaishnava. As a matter of fact, Vaishnava is not actually so eager to take material things from people. Actually, what they do, they take material things and transform it into spiritual by engaging that in Krishna's service. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is writing that Vaishnava is not interested about the wealth of the karmis. This wealth of the karmis is like stool. Actually, the person who has it, he himself should get rid of it. Right? So why should a Vaishnava collect the stool? But the thing is that he does it simply to deliver him from his karma. A person, when he is collecting the assets, making his money, he incurs a lot of sinful activities in order to do that. And then on top of that, his asset becomes a big bondage for him, big attachment for him. So just by offering it to Krishna, he transforms all his karmic karma into sukriti, transcendental piety. Like somebody made, say, $1,000, say, 1,000 marks. Now, in order to make the 1,000 marks, he had to go through a lot of difficulties. He had to work very hard. Now, whatever he has done in order to make that $1,000, when that $1,000 is used in Krishna's service, then it becomes, all that work that he rendered, all that he did in order to collect it, is transformed into Krishna's service. So it's an indirect way of engaging people in devotional service. A man, say, worked for 100 hours to get 1,000 Deutschmarks, right? Now, when the 1,000 Deutschmarks is engaged in Krishna's service, then that 100 hours that he worked becomes 100 hours of devotional service. So that's why the Vaishnavas are engaged in collecting donations. Vaishnavas go from door to door and they collect donation from people. And whatever they collect, although they do not know, they think that, oh, a beggar has come to my door. So give him something and get rid of him. Right? So just they reluctantly, willingly or unwillingly, they may offer some money to that man who has come to the door to collect something. But when he takes it, he offers it to Krishna. And the person where he collected it from, that person gets some transcendental sukriti, transcendental piety. It's actually out of his causeless mercy that Vaishnava goes to collect donations. That's why the occupation of a Vaishnava has been described as Madhukari. You all are familiar with this expression, Madhukari. Now, who knows the meaning of this word, Madhukari? Good, yeah. Madhukar means a honey bee. Madhu means honey. And kar means collector. One who collects honey. Actually, Sanskrit names are very meaningful. All Sanskrit words are very meaningful. Every word actually has a root. So, one of the names of the bees is Madhukar. And Madhukar means the collector of honey. So a bee is a collector of honey, that's why a bee is called Madhukar. And the occupation of a honey bee or a bee is called Madhukori. Now what does a bee do? Bee goes from flower to flower and collects the honey. And when the bee collects the honey, what he does the bee collect the honey to eat himself? To drink it itself? No. The bee collects the honey and offers it to the king. Of course, for bees, it's queen. The same way we collect, whatever we collect, we don't use it for ourselves. We offer it to our king, Krishna. Right? So that's our occupation. And while the bee is collecting honey, what it does, it transfers pollens, yeah? For, fertilization. Right? What's the expression that flowers, the male flowers and female flowers, I see. So that's what the bee does. Bee goes to collect honey from the flowers. The flowers actually don't have any utility of the honey. They don't really need the honey. Flowers can't really drink it. Pollen, the flowers become fruits, right? So same way, the flower's life becomes successful just by coming in contact with a bee. So same way, a man's goal of a man's life is not to collect material assets. The goal of his life is to become spiritually situated. And the fructification takes place only when he comes in contact with a Vaishnava. And just by coming in contact with the Vaishnava, he becomes spiritually enlivened, and then he develops a spiritual body. Right? In the flower, we do not see the fruit. The fruit is actually hidden in the flower. The same way our spiritual form is hidden underneath our material body. So when we become spiritually enlivened, then our spirit soul becomes fructified and our spiritual form develops. So that's why it is very important that we come in contact with the devotee, Vaishnava devotee, and have a favorable relationship with him. When we develop a favorable attitude towards the Vaishnava, then automatically our life becomes successful. So, to go back to this point briefly. So here, Dhruva Maharaj's stories are going to be, Dhruva Maharaj's activities are going to be revealed, and it has been pointed out that how Dhruva Maharaj came from a very, very famous family, very big family. Like everybody is proud. Jai Shri Singh Bhagavan Ki Jai. When someone hails from a big family, he feels very great. And everybody looks at him also with great awe and reverence. Right? Now, everybody wants to become an aristocrat. Right? But everybody has the right to belong to the most elevated, transcendental aristocratic line. One can become the most elevated transcendental aristocrat just by becoming a follower of Lord Chaitanya. Right? Who is more aristocratic than Krishna, the King of Kings? And just by being connected to the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, just by being duly initiated by the the acharyas of this society, one becomes the most aristocratic person. Not materially, but spiritually. Material aristocracy is just temporary. And it doesn't really have any meaning. And it's actually very unfortunate. Like, bigger the family, the more degraded they are. Isn't it? If you go back into the history, you can see that the family of big kings, they're so degraded. Big debauchees, big drunkards, completely ruthless, didn't have any consideration for anybody. They killed thousands of people without any rhyme or reason. So that is not the real aristocracy. The real aristocracy is in Krishna consciousness. And we are very proud to belong to this family. And we want to increase our line, increase our family. That's why we invite everyone. Why don't you come? And actually, you all have the right to belong to this family. So why don't you come and join us and enjoy the transcendental bliss just by becoming a part of this family. And then at the time of your death, your father or your grandfather or great-grandfather will come and take you by hand back to the spiritual sky. It's such a wonderful opportunity. Let's try to take full advantage of it. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Yeah. Yeah. Yes, about spiritual subjects, one may even have doubts even at liberated stage. Like, it's not that liberated stage means just becoming everything or becoming nothing, right? There is variety even in a liberated stage, right? Like, even in the liberated condition, there are five different mellows, different platforms, right? Brahma Sajujya, then Vaikuntha Prapti, right? And then Vrindavan. And so, although one is situated in chit aspect, right? One is fully cognizant, but still a limited jiva, he has his limitation of perception. And that is revealed by the arrangement of Jogamaya. So it's not, Jogamaya makes arrangements that a living entity, even in Krishna's pastimes or Vishnu's pastimes, sees only certain aspects, right? Otherwise there would not be the question of variety or novelty, right? Actually, Jogamaya even bewilders Krishna, right? Jogamaya, by her potency, even covers Krishna up, right? Of course, it is by Krishna's will that she does it. And Krishna forgets things, right? That's why we see that Krishna in Dwarka is lamenting for his friends in Vrindavan. He is yearning to go back to Vrindavan, right? So there is this arrangement in the spiritual nature also. And when one is in such a state when he is not quite aware of the transcendental reasons and transcendental cause, right? Then he must approach the spiritual master or a senior, some elevated personality in the spiritual sky and clarify his doubts. Yes, exactly. Arjun is a pure devotee of Krishna. So how can there be question, how can there be delusion? How can Arjun be deluded? But by Krishna's arrangement, for the time being, Arjun is bewildered. He is completely overpowered by this grief. And it is an arrangement of Jogomaya so that the world can get Bhagavad Gita. The difference is that there it is just the arrangement of Jogomaya by the sheer desire of Krishna. Whereas in the material nature, it is due to our karmic reactions. Over there it is causeless, but here it has the cause. The cause is karma. But there it is causeless. Nobody can define or describe why it happened, right? Or how it happened. How? Because it's arranged by Jogamaya. And why? Because Krishna wanted it. Otherwise, how can Arjun be deluded, right? I mean, actually, it's a very nice point. I have seen even devotees, how they overcome grief. Like other day, about 2 years back, a devotee's father died. He is from England, and his parents, his sister called up Calcutta, and I was there, so she gave me the news that his father and mother died. I think father died. And I was feeling very bad to break the news to him that his father died. And then finally when I told him, he was totally unaffected. He was just lamenting that, oh, it's unfortunate. If I was there, then I could have chanted the holy name and given him Krishna Prasad. Right? So you can see that how devotees become unaffected by grief. And here Arjun, such a great warrior, right, and a pure devotee of Krishna, is breaking down like that in the battle of Kurukshetra. We have to understand it is the arrangements of Jogamaya. Insincerity. Because if one is sincerely rendering devotional service, then the spiritual master and Krishna can never be displeased. The spiritual master and Krishna doesn't see how successfully you are doing it, right? But they see how sincerely you are rendering the service. Now, if they are dissatisfied, that means one is not rendering the service sincerely enough. The lack of sincerity is the cause of their displeasure. Krishna doesn't see how big a thing we accomplish. Krishna simply sees how sincerely we are rendering the service. Like, you know the story of Ramchandra and the spider? The spider, when Ramchandra was building the bridge across the ocean to Lanka, Hanuman was carrying big, big mountain peaks, huge boulders in his back, on his head, and he was throwing those boulders into the ocean. They're not actually boulders, but they were huge mountain tops, right? He was breaking the mountains and throwing them in the ocean, right? And so there was a small spider, and the spider was throwing some dust on the water, because, you know, what is the capacity of a spider? And Hanuman told the spider that, please move out of there. Don't you see that I'm carrying these big boulders for our Lord Ramchandra to build the bridge? So, just move out of here, because I must step onto you and your precious life will be finished. So then Ramchandra came to Hanuman and said, Hanuman, don't think that only you are rendering big service to me. This spider also is rendering service unto me. With his limited ability, he is throwing whatever little sand he can throw into the ocean. And he said, his service is also as valuable as yours. So don't minimize his service. because the dimension of his service is not that big as yours. So what is the understanding, what is the purport from this incident? That is, sincerity is the only consideration. If we are an ant, and in our antly ability, whatever we do for Krishna, with sincerity, Krishna will be satisfied. Krishna will recognize that. But if you are an elephant, but then if you render a service like that of an ant, right, then it is bad. That shows that you are not sincere enough. Right? So sincerity is the main consideration in devotional service. Well, it will depend. Like, if one is sincere, then he won't make mistakes. Right? Because when one is sincere, then Krishna gives him the intelligence. Right? So when one is sincere, he renders his service very sincere and very intelligently. So there cannot be mistake. And even if there is mistake, that won't be seriously considered. Right? Like, this was very, very obvious with Prabhupada. Sometimes you would see that somebody would come, make a big mistake, but Prabhupada would chastise him. On the other hand, Prabhupada would encourage him. But somebody would make a small mistake, and Prabhupada would be so angry that he would blast him for 2 days in a row. So Prabhupada was seeing, he knew the cause, and when he saw that the cause was insincerity, he was very angry. But when somebody rendered some service sincerely, but if he was not successful, Prabhupada did not mind it. Okay. Materially you may not be successful, but spiritually you will be. Because the only consideration for spiritual success is sincerity. Right? So say for instance you're building a house for Krishna. Now you're building it very sincerely. Right? But for some reason the house collapses. Right? So materially you are unsuccessful because the house is not complete. Like it collapsed. Right? But spiritually Krishna accepted the service that he rendered. Right? So although materially unsuccessful, you have been spiritually successful. Yeah. Sampradayas. They have, they are mainly into worshipping the deities in the temple, the other four paramparas. That's the main thing. But Mahaprabhu came and Mahaprabhu gave us a simplified process. Just chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. So that's why Mahaprabhu's mercy is so special. And Mahaprabhu showed us the way back to Vrindavan. Whereas these four paramparas, their goal actually is Vaikuntha. That's the difference. That was your question? Yeah. Any other question? Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Swayambhuva Manu had two sons by his wife Shatarupa, and the names of the sons were Uttanapad and Priyabrata. Because both of them were descendants of a plenary expansion of Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are very competent to rule the universe, to maintain and protect the citizens. Please repeat after me. Svayambhuva Manu had two sons by his wife Satarupa. And the names of the sons were Uttanapad and Priyavrata. Because both of them were descendants of a plenary expansion of Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are very competent to rule the universe, to maintain and protect the citizens. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. It is said that these two kings, Uttanapada and Priyavrata, were specifically empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unlike the great king Rishava, who was the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. It's a very short purport. Anyway, we'll discuss on this first. So, there are different kinds of incarnation. There are six different kinds of incarnation. They are known as avatars, six different kinds of avatars, like Purushavatar, Gunavatar, Yugavatar, Lilavatar, Shaktavesh Avatar, and Manantar Avatar. The Purushavatars are three Purushas. Who are the three Purushas? Karanadakshay Vishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Kshiradakshay Vishnu. And three Gunavatars are the presiding deities of three modes of material nature, and they are Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva. Then there are different kinds of Lilavatars. The Lord appears at different times to perform different pastimes. And those Lilavatars are Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, etc. And then there are Yugavatars. There are four Yugas, and four different Yugas, in order to establish the Yuga Dharma, the Dharma, specific religiosity, the specific process of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called Yuga Dharma. So the Lord comes in order to establish the Yuga Dharma, and they are Hamsa, Yajna, Krishna, and Gaura. So these are four different incarnations of four different Yugas. And then there are Manvantar Avatar. When there is no appropriate Manu to take care of the affairs of mankind, then the Lord sometimes appears to play the role of Manu. There are 14 Manus in the day of Brahma, and when there is no qualified Manu to take over that responsibility, then the Lord appears as Manvantara Avatar, and then sometimes the Lord empowers some living entities to perform some specific business, and that is known as Shaktavesh Avatar, or empowered incarnation. And so here it has been pointed out that Priyavrata and Uttanapad, two sons of Manu, were actually the empowered incarnations of the Lord. Now, actually, living entities are always a part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as a matter of fact, whatever a living entity does is due to the potency of the Lord. Apart from the Lord's power, the living entities don't have any ability to perform anything. As a matter of fact, without the will of the Lord, even a blade of grass doesn't move. So, we may become very puffed up to think, oh, we are capable of doing so many different things and so on and so forth. But as a matter of fact, we do not have any ability to do anything whatsoever. And actually, living entities have been endowed with certain facilities to act, but those activities also are directed by the modes of material nature. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasa ahankaro bimuratma karta ham tumannate. In the material nature, everything is happening by the modes of material nature and the karmas of different living entities. Guna karma vibhagasha. Whatever is happening to us is actually due to our previous activities, the result of our pious and sinful activities, and the influence of the modes of material nature. That is how everything is becoming active on the material nature. But unfortunately, being puffed up with our false ego, being completely bewildered by our false ego, we think that we are the doers. Ahankaro bimhuratma karta hamiti manmati. That's why for an intelligent person, it is expected that he realizes these facts and surrenders unto Krishna. If we realize that actually I do not have anything, I do not have any ability to do anything, I do not have any strength, I do not have any power, I do not have any means to do anything, then if we get to know by our good fortune that actually Krishna is the supreme controller, then what is expected out of an intelligent man? An intelligent man must surrender himself unto Krishna. Actually, Krishna has given us some ability, some potency. But when we squander those potencies, then what happens? Then we suffer. And that's why in the material nature, everyone is suffering. Krishna has given everybody certain amount of ability and certain amount of means. But when people do not utilize those abilities and means for the sake of performing the business that he was supposed to do, then it is natural that they will be punished. And that's exactly what is happening in the material nature. In the material nature, the maya or the personification, the personified external energy of the Lord, Mahamaya, she is doing that job. When somebody does not act on behalf of Krishna, when somebody does not utilize his abilities for the sake of Krishna, then Maya punishes them. People often complain, why am I suffering? Why there is so much misery? Why the terrorists are blasting bombs all over Europe? Why so many people, innocent, so-called innocent people, are dying? They have so many questions, why? They have so many complaints. But if they are reminded of these facts, that Krishna had asked them, Krishna sent them with certain amount of ability and means to render some service unto him. And if one does not do that, then he must suffer. Actually, whenever one suffers, one must understand that it is due to his sinful activities. And what is the sin? The sin is not to act on behalf of Krishna. Our independence is sin. When Adam took the forbidden fruit, that was his sin, and that's why he lost the kingdom of heaven. Actually, spiritual style. They do not have the proper understanding that where is the kingdom of heaven. Actually, the kingdom of God. They lost the kingdom of God, the spiritual sky. Every living entity lost his right to live in the kingdom of his father, the Lord, because he took the forbidden fruit. And what is that forbidden fruit? The forbidden fruit is the desire to act without Krishna or without Krishna consciousness. When a living entity defies the Lord and tries to become independent and enjoy the material nature, being provoked by a woman, by an intense desire to enjoy with his senses, that is the forbidden fruit. Actually, a living entity, when he comes in contact with the material nature is actually symbolized by a woman. Maya actually is a woman. And so whenever somebody wants to enjoy himself, trying to think that he is the Lord of this nature, that is the offense. When you look at this incidents from Bible in the light of Krishna consciousness, it becomes very clear to us. Generally, people nowadays think that these all are symbolic narrations, but actually they are facts. A living entity, as soon as he came in contact with the material nature, he thought himself to be the Lord of the material nature. He thought that he is the enjoyer and the material nature is enjoyed. He thought that he is male and this material nature is female. And then he developed the desire to enjoy, defying the laws of Krishna. And he immediately fell down into the material nature. Immediately he became bound by the material nature, losing his eternal right to stay in the kingdom of God. Krishna bohir mukh hoiya bhogobancha kare nikatastho maya tare japotiya dhare. As soon as a living entity desires to enjoy without Krishna consciousness, then immediately Maya, who is standing close by, grabs him. Maya's embrace is actually Maya's grabbing the living entity. A living entity, being bewildered, he thinks that, oh, how beautiful this embrace is. But actually, it is a clasp that ties him down with like a chain. So, the living entities are Krishna's eternal servants, and as a servant, a living entity is supposed to render service unto Krishna. Besides that, he doesn't have any other business. And when a living entity does that, no matter how insignificant he is, the moment he begins to render service unto Krishna, then Krishna begins to empower him. A pure devotee of Krishna is always empowered by Krishna. That's why we see that in devotional service, some people, those who are so insignificant, those who do not have any ability whatsoever, but they perform such wonderful activities. There are so many examples, even in our movement, we see that people, those who are not really very qualified materially, but they are performing such wonderful service. And we have to understand that it is due to Krishna's mercy. Krishna, when somebody becomes a proper medium, then Krishna uses him. And that's why Prabhupada sang in his song to that he wrote when he was going to America. It's called Markine Bhagavad Dharma. And he says that nachao nachao prabhu nachao shemate kashter puttali yatha nachao shemate. My Lord, please make me dance like a puppet in your hand. And that is the desire of a pure devotee. He doesn't want to become independent. He doesn't want to become isolated from the Lord. He simply wants to become a soul completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of God. Like a puppet does not have any ability or any desire to dance himself. Puppet is completely surrendered to the puppeteer. And the puppet dancer, he makes the puppet dance as he desires. And if the puppet dancer is a person, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, then we can really imagine how, what kind of dance it is going to be when we become surrendered to him, when we become surrendered in his hand like a puppet. So, but if we try to dance ourselves, then it becomes a joke. When we try to dance ourselves, we do not have any, we do not have any ability. We got some ability to render some service for Krishna, but we decided to misutilize that ability. Then we do not have any understanding of what dance actually is. We do not have any concept of rhythm, we do not have any concept of tune. And then when we try to dance, it becomes a big joke. And we all become a laughing stock. In the material platform, actually, no matter whatever one is doing, it's a joke. And I'm sure every devotee also feels that when we think of our past, what we were doing before we came to Krishna consciousness, we feel so embarrassed. Because it seems that everything we did was wrong. And when we think back, we wonder, so many people must have been laughing at us, just seeing the way we were leading our lives. And at least I feel very embarrassed when I think of my past. But instead, if we become a soul surrendered to Krishna, if we become surrendered to Krishna, then everything becomes wonderful. Because then we are not the controller. We are not the doer. We simply become surrendered to Krishna and we allow him to use us. And Krishna is such a perfect master that he knows how to use us, and in whatever service we become engaged, we become perfectly situated. That's why we see in Krishna consciousness, devotees, whatever they do, they do it so wonderfully. When they clean the pot, they do it first class. Right? When they cook in the kitchen, although they do not have any idea of Indian cooking, but when they cook in the kitchen, it becomes so delicious. When they go out and distribute books, they distribute so many books. When they give lectures, they give such beautiful lectures, so full of wisdom. So everything a devotee does is first class. And we noticed with Prabhupada, whatever Prabhupada used to do was first class. I mean, not only first class, it was absolutely transcendental. Like everybody is familiar with Prabhupada's songs and such a wonderful way of singing. The way Prabhupada used to sing is so wonderful, as if immediately it reaches your heart. And when Prabhupada wrote, you see how wonderfully Prabhupada explained this transcendental knowledge of Krishna consciousness through his books. When Prabhupada spoke, it was so wonderful. When Prabhupada smashed somebody, it is so wonderful. No one could ever actually defeat Prabhupada. Prabhupada defeated everyone. Even the big scientists and philosophers came And they just appeared to be like a mosquito in front of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada just smashed them very easily. Then when Prabhupada cooked, it was so wonderful. I mean, it's really, it tasted as if it just came down from the spiritual sky. And I noticed that it is impossible to, although Prabhupada came, gave us the recipe, showed us how to cook, even stood there, but made us cook it in front of him. Still, it tastes like Prabhupada's own cooking. So that is the symptom of a pure devotee. Whatever he does is wonderful. And what makes him a pure devotee, he never accepts any credit for that. In the material platform also, there are so many people, those who can do so many things. But the difference between them and a pure devotee is that pure devotee never accepts any credit for whatever he's doing. Sometimes he may joke, like sometimes Prabhupada says, once he asked Prabhupada how no one could defeat him. Then Prabhupada's reply was, how can you defeat me? You all are insane and I am sane. You all are mad and I am normal. So how can a madman defeat a normal man? So that was, Prabhupada would joke like that sometimes. But at the heart of his heart, Prabhupada was very, very surrendered to Krishna. Jaya Shri Shri Radha Madhava. Prabhupada never accepted any credit for anything he did. I remember once some reporters came to interview Prabhupada in Calcutta, and they were telling Prabhupada that Mahaprabhu spread Krishna consciousness all over India, but Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And he tried to imply that Prabhupada did something even greater than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Prabhupada immediately he disapproved it and said, no, whatever I have done is actually due to the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and my Guru Maharaj. I didn't do anything. My Guru Maharaj and Mahaprabhu did everything. But they simply gave me the credit. So that was Prabhupada's mood all the time. He never really accepted any credit for anything. Even when devotees glorified Prabhupada, how wonderfully he spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, how he performed a wonderful, a rather impossible task, then Prabhupada's reply was, actually my Guru Maharaj very mercifully sent you all, and that's why this has been accomplished. A 70-year-old man went to America without any help, without any financial or moral support from anybody, and struggled through the greatest possible difficulties in America for 1 year, didn't have a place to stay, didn't have a didn't have any means to take care of his food even, and thus he started the movement single-handed, spread it all over the world in 10 years time. But when it came to it, he gave all the credit to his disciples. That is because my Guru Maharaj sent you all, that's why this movement spread. I do not have any credit for this. And not only he said that, while saying that, he just broke down in tears. So that is the sign of a pure devotee. Devotee means humble. Devotees cannot afford to be arrogant. Whenever somebody becomes arrogant, then Krishna takes care of them. Actually, we cannot be arrogant at the same time remain in the spiritual platform. The moment Krishna detects not even Krishna, actually, that is not, Krishna doesn't really notice that. But the moment Maya detects some arrogance, some false pride in us, then immediately Maya flicks us out of the spiritual path. The way we flick an ant out of the floor or a table. It doesn't take Maya anything to smash us, no matter how big we think we are. Actually, more inflated we become with our false pride, easier it becomes for Maya to smash us. So that's why it is always better to be humble. Maintain a mood of humility. The mood of humility is actually a mood of withdrawal. Maya comes to punch you and you withdraw yourself. Maya misses the punch. So that is how devotee maintains his safety. But if we stand very rigidly, thinking that I am the greatest, then we become a very nice target for Maya. And then Maya just gives us a punch and then we are flat on the ground. So for a devotee, it is very important to maintain this mood of humility. Otherwise, how can we ever appreciate that Krishna is the doer? If we think that I am the greatest, no one is as big as I am, and without me, the world will not work, the world will stop if I stop acting. If we maintain that kind of mood, then how can we ever appreciate the glories of Krishna? But if we become humble, if we realize that it is Krishna who is the doer, then Krishna will provide us with the due qualifications. Krishna will empower us and and we will be able to, or no, I won't say we will be able to, but through us Krishna will do wonderful things. And that is a devotee. Like we see, or rather we pray so often, Mukam Karoti Bachalam Pongung Langhayati Girim. A dumb man can speak eloquently and a lame man can cross the mountain by the mercy of the Lord. So that is how inconceivable the mercy of Krishna is. If we are dumb, if we are totally unable to speak, but by Krishna's mercy, we will become eloquent and recite beautiful poetry. Srimad Bhagavatam, the biggest philosophical poetry. And if we are lame, if we do not have the ability to walk, but we will be able to cross the mountain. So impossible will be accomplished by the mercy of Krishna. And that will be possible only when we become totally surrendered to Krishna. Krishna wants to empower us. Krishna wants to empower us, provided we become the proper via medium. When we become the proper medium in the hand of Krishna. So these two great personalities, Uttanapad and Priyabrata, two sons of Manu, were thus empowered by Krishna. Why? Because they were surrendered to Krishna. Now if we become surrendered to Krishna like them, then Krishna will empower us also. Krishna is very eager to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, provided we are willing to become a proper instrument in the hands of Krishna. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have a question? Yeah. Well, it may be difficult, but that, does that justify that we should not try? Something may be difficult. Like a lame man may think that I can't even walk 5 meters. How can I cross the mountain? Right? But if that lame man has the faith in Krishna, thinking that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and for Krishna, it is very, very important that I climb up on top of the mountain. Right? If he has that faith in Krishna, not in himself, but in Krishna, that I do not have the ability to do it, but Krishna can do that. Then Krishna will make it possible. Right? Now the same way, it is difficult to remain fixed up in Krishna consciousness. Right? There are so many obstructions. There are so many deviations. Right? But still, with our unflinching faith in Krishna, we must carry on. If everybody thinks it's impossible and we can't do it, then how it will be done? Right? And that's why we have this Bhagavatam class every morning. We want to remind ourselves as well as everybody else that how we should become fixed up in rendering our devotional service to Krishna. And it is not difficult to see that how impossible is being accomplished. Right? Like before you became devotees, you didn't even think of building a house, right? You never thought of, even to paint a room, you hired somebody. But now, in Krishna consciousness, you all are building this barn house, right? How is it possible? It is possible because Krishna is helping you. Krishna is giving you the qualification or ability. So, actually, to lose faith is not very good. To not have faith is the business of a sudra. Sudras don't have faith. They think, they begin with the thing that, well, it cannot be done, or I cannot do it. That's why they have to work under someone. But the Brahmins, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they do not think like that. They think that everything must be done, right? Especially the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Vaishyas do not have that kind of faith. They think that with our money I will do everything. I cannot do that, but I'll make money, and then with the money I'll hire somebody, and then I'll get it done by him, right? Is it clear? Yeah. It's good. That's a good symptom. Yeah. That's actually a sign of advancement. Right? Because, consider, when you joined the movement, you thought that you are a pure devotee. Isn't it? But now you are saying that it is impossible to become a pure devotee. So is it a progress or a regress? That's a sign that you are making progress. Actually, more you make advancement, more you realize that how impossible it is to become a pure devotee. But as we feel it is impossible, Krishna actually makes us purer and purer.
Any other question?
Oh, yeah, sure.
You have to be absolutely advanced, yeah, to transcend that. Because when you surrendering to Krishna means surrendering all your everything material, right? But if you're maintaining some attachments to material things, then of course you are not surrendered, right? And when you become totally surrendered,